There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Brandy and I are used to talking into microphones in an empty studio, but how good are we at presenting to hundreds of stony faces in a locked room? Talking to individual strangers bothers most people, but presenting to multiple strangers really bothers almost everybody. We're pleased to talk to a man now whom Brandy and I can probably learn a thing or two from. He's Mark Brown, former Toastmasters International world champion of public speaking, and he's in the studio. Mark, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you both.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. Before we share your tips on public speaking, tell us about that title, World Public Speaking Champion. How did you earn that badge?
I had to endure six levels of competition back in 95, starting at a local Toastmasters Club at Reader's Digest in New York. Over 6 months, about 20,000 to 30,000 people every year enter that contest. Only 10 become finalists. As a finalist in 94, did not win a trophy. I came back in 95 and was able to win the whole thing and became the world champion. Changed my life.
Well, in what way did it change your life? I mean, you can imagine. I mean, if you've got, you're competing about against 30,000 people, you've done pretty well. So in what way did it change your life?
Well, first, it opened doors for me to share my message and my life with other people. And my background is mainframe computer programming. I did that for several years. And when I won the title, I began to be asked, Mark, could you please come talk to us? Please share your tips with us. I got asked.
Was it mainly computer stuff in those days?
Well, no. It was about communication, yeah. Because it's a vital skill to have, no matter what kind of work you do. And I was asked to go to Canada, to Hong Kong, and before I knew it, I have had a career as a speaker.
Toastmasters International, if you don't know, is a sort of it's a global organization that has local chapters which encourage people to stand up and talk about anything, really, in front of other groups of people in that particular chapter. And it's a great step for people to gain some self-confidence in talking to audiences. I mean, and talking to colleagues or strangers in business can be daunting for very many people, not because they don't know their business, but because they don't have the confidence. What tips can you give that might improve that confidence for people?
You know, first of all, I would say definitely know your material. Sadly, so many people, though, they have material in their hearts, but we're in a PowerPoint age, visuals. I say pitch the PowerPoint, because if it dies, will you die too? You know your material. Share your material from the heart and be yourself while you do it.
I think that's all very well if you know your subject better than anybody else in the room. But when you don't, when you know there are people who actually know the subject better than you do, it can be very daunting. However much confidence you've got before you walk into the meeting room, that can evaporate fairly quickly.
It can, but if you understand, and from my perspective, if I realize there's a PhD in the room, I have no PhD degree, but my experience and the evidence I bring, my stories, my facts, my supporting material will support me, I'll share it. And if I don't know, I'll tell them, I don't know that, but I'll tell you what it is. I'll find out.
Where do you stand then, Mark, on some of the newer ways of carrying prompts into the room? PowerPoint, I can see, might be a little bit old hat now, but in terms of having, I don't know, bullet points on a phone or an iPad or something?
Nothing wrong with notes. But don't let your notes or your props overtake your message. If your message is most important, that must come through. And I think many people use props and visuals as a crutch. But the audience came to see you, and it's going to sound kind of harsh. Listen, if I can read every point you make on a bullet on a screen, why do I need you?
What about a bullet point in my hand, though? A lot of people find getting up with absolutely nothing if they go dry, not even sort of a three or four words on a cue card, psychologically quite daunting.
That's okay too. I've used notes on business cards. I've used notes in the palm of my hand as well when the occasion warranted it. Doesn't mean I don't know what I'm talking about. Sometimes I've done some research overnight. I have new information. It isn't in my head yet. It's okay to share it. But don't be afraid to be who you are. That's the most important thing.
In reality, though, I mean, can anybody turn themselves into being an accomplished speaker? And how long does it take?
It's a skill that one can learn. For me, it's been over 25 years of learning. I'm still learning every single day. When I stop learning, I stop living. But one can learn it. And that's where Toastmasters can come in.
I guess so. But learning over the 25 years since you won the prize is one thing. But you had the guts to stand up and talk in a competition against 30,000 other people. You had that already. So how did you develop that before you went into the competition?
I went to my first club meeting in December of 92. You can join right away. I joined in April 93. I was a guest for 5 months before I dared say I will sign my name and become a member. It happens over time. And the beauty of Toastmasters is it's a very encouraging organization where everyone wants you to succeed. They educate you, they evaluate you, they encourage you, you get a mentor. And the idea is anyone can learn to be an effective public speaker. And for me, Toastmasters was a wonderful vehicle for doing that.
A lot of people who I know have gone to Toastmasters have done so because they've had a personal obstacle with public speaking that they've needed to overcome, whether it's a stutter, whether it's just profound nerves. Often there's a reason that people seek Toastmasters out, or even just a promotion at work, that they're worried about the speaking element. Was there a reason for you?
Very odd you ask that. I joined because I was first introduced by an uncle of mine from my home country of Jamaica. Justice Courtney Orr was the first Toastmaster in the country. And when he said Toastmasters, I went to work at Reader's Digest and someone said, "Mark, we have a Toastmasters club." I thought, my uncle does that. I'll try it. That was my only reason, because my uncle was my example.
When you won the prize back in 1995, your speech was entitled "A Second Chance." Yes. What was the sort of second chance principle?
It was about how we treat those who are different, to put aside our first impressions and give everyone a second chance to see who they are, what they represent.
You sang on stage the theme from Beauty and the Beast. Yes. Can you still sing it?
Probably poorly. No. Yeah, that was a scene where the Gaston, the villain, encourages the entire village to go attack the Beast's castle. And the line was, "We don't like what we don't understand. In fact, it scares us, and this monster is mysterious at least. Bring your guns, bring your knives, save your children and your wives. We'll save the village and our lives. We'll kill the Beast." And the audience erupted, and I was surprised.
They did.
It was only a tool, though. I learned that day, whatever tools you can bring to the program, to your presentation, use those tools effectively. If your gift is magic, if it's music, if it's poetry, whatever inserts your personality into the program will support you, and people will love you for it.
What's your top tip for nerves?
My top tip for nerves, I'd say use the nervous energy in a positive way. My attitude is, I can't wait to give the audience this message. I'm concerned. There are PhDs out there. There are people who are educated. But I know what my experience is, and I can't wait to share it with them. I view it this way. If I want to give the audience a gift, the best gift I can, I get one chance to do it. That's how I fight the nerves.
We often hear that sort of the top-end actors, Academy Award-winning actors, are nervous. Stage actors the same. Before they go on stage, right before, they're sweating, they're nervous, they're shaking. The minute they go on stage, they've transferred that energy into a positive form, and it's creativity. Mm. And it's obviously happening for you as well. Tell us why you're in Dubai at the moment.
I'm here to celebrate with the TriStar Toastmasters Club for their 6-year anniversary and their 100th meeting tomorrow. It's a big event for them. They have 300 Toastmasters all over the UAE coming in. We have guest speakers from as far away as China and, of course, from the US. And we're going to share with them and celebrate with them 100 meetings of their Toastmasters Club, which is a really huge milestone for them.
How relevant is Toastmasters today? Just to play devil's advocate, when I think of Toastmasters, I think of the people I knew who joined it 30 years ago. It was something that, like you say, people's uncles did. Is it trendy enough to attract younger generations now? Is it giving itself a facelift? Even the name itself, Toastmasters, could be seen to be a little bit old-fashioned.
Two things quickly. I went to work at Reader's Digest. I used to read every week the job postings. No matter what the job was, mailroom, MD, accountant, assistant, they always ask for excellent public speaking and written skills. Regarding youth, every year we crown a new world champion. And 2 years ago, our winner was Darren Tay from Singapore. Darren Tay is an attorney, age 27. Second place was Aaron Beverly, age 28. Third place, Josephine Lee, age 28. For the first time, first, second, and third place winners were all under 30 years of age. It is current. It's being used right now. And now they get to go on the media, on TV, on radio, and do their job more effectively because they become excellent communicators.
I can understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, millennials will have as many nerves as anybody else, as I did when I was starting in business. I'm guessing that as we change the way we do business, the way we present, we probably don't stand up and talk in front of an audience so much. Meetings kept to the minimum. We have different ways of communicating. A lot of it is electronic now rather than face-to-face. Do you think it's as relevant in offices? It may be if you're going to make a speech to a big audience. It's nice to know how to do that. But do you think that sort of we have as many face-to-face contacts as we did perhaps when you won the prize back in 95?
That's true, but definitely the art of being able to communicate effectively is valuable in the classroom, in the boardroom, in the living room. So no matter the forum, it could be video conferencing. As I do a lot of videos on Zoom and Skype. You communicate effectively, that's the point. It may not be a large live audience, but you want the audience to understand your point, to get, I mean, you're selling sometimes. You want the audience to understand your point of view and to get the information and supporting evidence that comes to how well you communicate.
Well, listen, thanks very much indeed for joining us this morning, Mark. We do appreciate it. Good luck in your time in Dubai. It's wonderful weather. Enjoy yourself. Mark Brown, former Toastmasters International World Champion of Public Speaking. We do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.